Hello and welcome back to Serie A Spotlight. We're your hosts Jay
and Matt.
You know what time it is!
I can't tell you guys enough how much you've been my internal monologue when thinking about football for the last year.
Yes, amazing!
We get to record while drinking some wine.
Jake and I will have a very special soft spot for Salah.
Yeah, we love him.
We love him.
Stop zooming in on Allegri's face, boy. You're gonna make
How
me
are you
break.
Exposing me?
Because you're gonna make me break.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Serie A Spotlight. This is episode number 179 and we're your hosts Matt
and Jake.
And today we'll be taking our listener questions from our special lovely patrons and Frank.
While also giving you an update on the latest news in Serie A. Yes, you might be wondering, why our patrons and Frank? What's so special about Frank, Matt?
Frank isn't a patron, but is probably the most engaging person we've ever had on the podcast, or following the podcast rather. He leaves a review of every single episode
on Twitter.
So we just had to hit Frank up. And
he's been doing this since the early days, since season one.
Since season one.
He's a real one, Frank.
Absolutely. So massive shout out to Frank. If you guys want to ask us questions and get a shout out on the podcast, either become a patron or be like Frank
and leave a review after every single episode.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Before we get into it, of course, a massive shout out goes to our media partners Benevo Bid. Again, they do have new autographed merch. They have a match issued Retegi kit, which is signed by the entire Nazionale at the moment. They've got signed kits by Materazzi, Gullit, Zanetti, and Di Livio, among others. So click the link in our bio, check out Benevo Bid, get your bids in nice and early, and most of the proceeds go to a local charity called Puttino Cares, because if there's one motherfucker that cares, maybe you know it's Puttino.
Absolutely beautiful, bro.
Thank you. I think Puttino should get us on board to do ads for them.
For sure.
Everyone would donate.
I can already imagine an ad like black and white, you know, like no one cares. Then a hand comes out of nowhere over the shoulders like Puttino.
Puttino cares, bro. Puttino cares. Of course, if you guys are new here, check us out on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube, and rate us 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts. Drop us a follow if you'd like. Send us a message. We're very engaging. We'll probably get back to you, or Jake will probably get back to you. During the season, we do weekly episodes covering every single match, every single team, every single week. But now it's the summer period, so we have to get creative.
Absolutely, yes. So we have more of these kind of fun, conversational, opinion-based episodes, unlike our usual stuff where we cover the match days, and they're a lot more facts-based and stats-based, to be honest. Yeah.
If you check out our link in bio, there's also a link for you to become a patron. It's $3.99 a month. If you win our fantasy league, you win a free kit, which we will post to you ourselves, and if we can't ship to wherever the fuck you live, we can send you the money.
Yes, like Joey D won it, and that was a little bit complicated to ship it there, so we just had to, of course.
A minor inconvenience.
Yes, minor inconvenience there. All right, so let's get into it.
Yes, sir.
So the first thing I want to touch up on, brother, is the under-21s Euros, of course, and Italy lost 3-2 to Germany, getting eliminated. However, they did leave with their heads held high. There
Absolutely.
Were some pros, a few cons as well. So Italy did take the lead through Colioscio in the 58th minute, but ended up conceding 2 goals and 2 men in Nyonto and Zanotti, as they got 2 red cards.
Yep.
Now, you might be wondering, who the hell is Colioscio? Because I had no idea either. And in fact, I'm probably mispronouncing his name, right?
He doesn't play in Italy, does he?
He doesn't. He plays in the Championship. I believe it's with Burnley, if you want to confirm that.
Oh, let me just try spell Colioscio first.
It's K-O-L-E-O-S-H-O. He's 20 years old. He has 28 appearances in the Championship. 20 of them were starts, and he did actually manage to score 2 goals in the Championship last season.
Mm. Yeah. So he is now, from 2023, I believe Burnley were in the Premier League. It says here that he plays for Premier League club Burnley.
Ooh, all right. But he somehow did have appearances in the championship as well. Not quite sure what's going on there. But you can see that he had a different kind of skill set to the rest of the team. Him and Njonto, they had a whole lot of intensity and just, you know, very aggressive energy and energetic play about them. You can see that they play in the championship slash the Premier League. But yes, this game got absolutely crazy after some time. So it was the 96th minute, of course.
Just to say, because Burnley were relegated under Vincent Kompany. Do you remember that? It wasn't last season, but the year before. So probably he played in the Premier League there. And then last year he played in the Championship, as you're saying.
Okay, so yes, and it was the 96th minute. Okay. Italy were down 2-1. They were 9 men against 11, and they had a free kick from a central position just outside the area. Of course, you're looking around at the profiles over there. It's an under 21 Euros. The pressure is next level. You know, it's 9 against 11. It's a total uphill battle. It's an impossible task. You've got to nail this free kick. It's the last kick of the game, or you've lost. Frosinone's very own Giuseppe Ambrosino steps up, the tiny man. 21 years old, last season played 36 games in Serie B, scored 5 goals and got 3 assists. He stepped up and I'm like, how strange, he's taking it. You know, there are so many names that we recognize in this team. You know, we're talking about the likes of Endur, Prati, Fabian, all these guys that are regulars in Serie A. But yes, it was indeed Ambrosino who stepped up and he took the free kick and he stunned the entire world, man. Top bins, crazy moment, crazy unbelievable scenes, man. Unbelievable free kick. Unbelievable free kick. Yeah. Of course, it went on to extra time where Italy defended with 9 men. You know, they made 2 changes. I believe Fazzini was one of them. Can't remember who the other one was right now. But it took till the 117th minute for Germany to score the winner and to go through. Heartbreaking. But of course, Italy did have problems with discipline this game. The referee was a little bit too harsh for my liking. Mm-hmm. Especially on Zanotti, who got a double yellow for dissent, which I've never seen before. And it seems harsh, eh? I mean, Njonto's just been sent off. They're fighting. Zanotti looked really inspired. He was playing really well. And then all of a sudden, he gets a yellow card for dissent, passes a comment and gets another yellow card. It just seems over the top to me.
And it's also a question of discipline, however. I'd love to hear what Zanotti had to say to the ref and what got him sent off. Because typically you get a yellow card for dissent. Shut up. Don't say anything else. So I think it's perhaps harsh, but also, well, it's the under 21 Euro. So you're going to see a bit of a few inexperienced moves here and there from the players. But what I think, there's been a lot of criticism about Italian youth recently. Italy were certainly underdogs in this competition. And I think despite them not progressing very far and getting knocked out in the quarterfinals, I think it's a good showcase of Italian talent.
I think so.
Surprisingly, and one of our patrons got me to it. I forgot which one. But Italy have one of the youngest squads in the entire competition. Mm-hmm. And I made a joke. I'm like, why is everyone 22, 23? It's literally the under 21s. Yes. Like, how does that make sense? But apparently, one of the youngest teams in the competition.
It's very good. I mean, it's often exaggerated how poor Italy has been doing, of course. When it comes, there are, of course, some discrepancies when it comes to the senior team that have been obvious in recent years. For example, the lack of a striker, like Italy hasn't been producing strikers, and now with Trezeguet and Keane, that's actually a bit of a breath of fresh air. Because for a while, you know, we saw the likes of Graziano Pelle, who I love, no problem. Yes. But of course, to many people, he wasn't up to
Zaza.
Exactly, Zaza. Yeah, especially after the strikers of the past, there was a little bit of.
But it's interesting. Yeah. I agree with you. The striker situation is real. I don't think there's a lack of young talent. I think that's a bit of a ridiculous statement and a very negative statement to make about Italian footballers, because I think there's a lot of up-and-coming Italian talent. Christ, there's Camarda, for Christ's sake, who's one of the most talented 16-year-olds in the world. But the striker situation is true, but there were two very talented ones just that never hit it off for the international team, which was crazy, because Immobile is domestically one of the greatest strikers in Serie A history without a debate. Modern legend, greatest striker probably in Lazio's history, top scorer.
Yeah.
And there was someone else in my mind. And there was Belotti as well, who at Torino before his injuries, you know, he was decent, in the conversation. And Keane was one of the most unluckiest fucking strikers in history when he was at Juve. So he could have broken out before that.
Absolutely. Absolutely, bro. Yes, so this game was absolutely unbelievable, especially that ending. What a finale. And I was thinking to myself, like, these don't go in anymore. I haven't seen one of these go in. It went in and I couldn't believe it. I sent a video immediately on the group. Now, while this was happening, chaos in Salerno, right? As there was the second leg of the relegation playout where Salernitana went into it losing 2-0, right? As we mentioned in our last episode, of course, the game had to be postponed because the Salernitana players were suffering from food poisoning, quite a few of them, or as Matthew calls it, chicken fever, which I found hilarious, by the way, bro. Every time I watch that snippet, I'd die.
I didn't think it was funny when I said it.
After recovering from food poisoning, they hosted them for the second leg, and there was a glimmer of hope at the start as Ferrari scored at the beginning for Salernitana. Most of you will remember Gianmarco Ferrari from Sassuolo. And that took them to needing one goal, essentially, to get back into it, to equalize. So I got up and I went to get myself a portion of soup, right? When this goal went in, I'm like, we're in for a cracker over here. It's going to be classic drama.
Serie B relegation playout. Of course, you have to watch it with some soup,
some,
you know?
Carrot and onion soup with some jbeina inside. Delicious, bro. You know how good it was. Ah, but when I sat down, I see the score. I'm like, 1-0. I'm like, let's go. And then I noticed the 1-0 was for Sampdoria. I'm like, what the hell happened over here? Did I misread what happened? Did Ferrari score like an own goal or something? Like, what happened? Then I realized the goal, Ferrari's goal, was chalked off, and Massimo Coda scored a few seconds later.
Of course, Massimo Coda
exactly
scored.
From kickoff, basically, just 2 minutes after that. And they went from needing one goal to equalize to needing three to equalize in just 2 minutes. And it was at that point where Salernitana's fans started throwing seats onto the pitch. The match was suspended. The riot police came out with their shields.
This was a 2-0 for Sampdoria.
Exactly. Sorry, they eventually went down 2-0. But it was a bit of a disaster for Salernitana.
So the game got suspended. It got abandoned.
But Salernitana down in Chi, as they say in Italy. It was Sibilli who scored the second goal in the 49th minute, and all hell broke loose after that.
It must be so strange for the Salernitana fans, some of the best fans in Italy, by the way. But they go up to Serie A, they're last for the entirety of the season, get Davide Nicola, the greatest miracle for them to stay up from last place, incredible scenes for them to stay up on the final match day. And then the next season, they managed to stay up again, no? Salernitana, and then relegated down to B, and now down to C. Just the wildest five years for Salernitana.
Especially when you look at the team, man. You know, like, the team should be good enough to compete in Serie B. They've got Cherry up front, who was in Serie A for half the season. There's Raimondo, who was a youth player who was quite highly rated. Soriano, who we know from Bologna. Amatucci and Hristovic in the middle, Giglione out wide, Ferrari and Lajoszvili at the back, Christensen in goal, there's Simeon Wanko on the team, of course. There are so many players who we know well, you know, who definitely should be good enough to at least not get relegated from Serie B, you know.
Exactly.
But yeah, absolutely, that was very much that. And now we can give you a bit of an update on the Club World Cup. So at the moment, it's just Inter, of course, and Juve participating in the Club World Cup.
Yıldız is having some performances, aren't they? Yıldız
is lighting up the tournament. He scored three lovely goals. Three goals, and the commentators are like, yeah!
Fucking
Yıldız! What a goal for Juventus! Yeah,
inspired after meeting Donald Trump, huh?
Absolutely inspired.
Given them some words of wisdom. Go get them, Keenan.
You guys know exactly what the fuck you're doing. They smashed WAC 4-1. They smashed Al Ain 5-0. They went Al Ain on them. Yeah. So it's Yildiz with 3 goals. They are currently first in their group, Juve.
They ainled them.
They ainled them, exactly. And then you have Inter, who had a bit of a mixed bag as they drew to Monterrey.
Mm-hmm.
Monterrey, probably.
Great wrestler back
yes,
in the
and then they came back to beat the mighty Urawa Reds from a 1-0 deficit to win 2-1. And that included a lovely Carboni winner, who might actually find some space under Kivu, because Kivu knows him well from youth level, of course. And the fact that Kivu plays with two kind of attacking midfielders behind the striker gives him a slot to play in which didn't exist under Inzaghi.
And of course, a Francesco Pio assist on that goal.
Ooh.
I won't get too much into Francesco Pio because we have a question about him. So we'll discuss him soon. Been loving, by the way, haven't gotten to watch much of it. But it's so refreshing seeing like these South American teams and how
they're so good, bro,
and how well they're playing and how they're
Botafogo, Palmeiras, they're playing really well.
I fucking love Botafogo, man. I fucking love Botafogo.
You mean Nottingham Forest?
These South American teams are doing so well. They were undefeated up until very recently. But a really, really exciting competition, man. I'm really enjoying following it.
Games are a bit difficult to watch at times, especially the 3 a.m. ones, but but it's of course and it's very hot apparently, like they're playing in 40 degrees. Lautaro Martinez, I think we have to mention as well, his bicycle kick. I don't know if you've seen it, but his bicycle kick was absolutely out of this world, man.
Delicious.
Yeah, that was to equalize, of course, against the Urawa Reds. And fun little fact as well is that Inter conceded to Sergio Ramos.
Yes,
it was a lovely header. His movement was like of a striker.
Oh man, super because good. Ramos, firstly, he's got over 100 career goals, by the way.
Does he really have over 100?
Yes, I'll tell you exactly how many goals Sergio Ramos has in his career. I wrote Serie A. But he even for Real Madrid, he ended up, he has 145 career goals.
Jesus.
And not many of them were penalties. I think he's got a few penalties, because when Ronaldo left Real, Ramos was the rigorista.
Ah, yes.
But headers, bro, free kicks, he's just one of the greatest of all time, right? Ramos.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was also Lautaro who equalized that game, so he's on 2 goals as well. All right. So I think that's enough for actual football. And we can move on now to gossip, right?
Yes,
we can gossip, we can talk about people, apparently, because that's what football podcasts are. I've realized recently we're just talking about people for 2 hours every week.
No, this is essential. It might as well be a Love Island podcast. Right. No, we're just talking about stats.
Yeah.
Who got pied, who got...
Exactly, who's getting sacked in the morning.
Exactly.
It's just mean gossip. So just manager updates that we haven't actually addressed over here is that Stroppa has officially joined Venezia, Pippo Inzaghi has officially joined Palermo, and Pioli has officially joined Fiorentina. What do you think of that, first of all, Pioli joining Fiorentina?
I think it's a fit. I think Pioli's due a return to Italy after what he managed to do at Milan. He knows Fiorentina. Yeah. I said this before, he has two tattoos on his body. One is for winning Milan's 19th Scudetto, and the other one's for the deceased captain, Davide Astori, legend. Mm-hmm. But he is moving to a club where he's going to feel the pressure, Pioli. So it's sink or swim. I say pressure, why? Because over the past 4 seasons, Fiorentina have managed to get European football. Or the past 3 seasons rather, twice with Italiano and now last season with Palladino as well. If he comes in and he doesn't manage to get them at least Conference League, then he's going to be the first manager that hasn't done it in 3 seasons. So there is an expectation for Fiorentina, right?
Yeah.
And now he's going in and is very well possibly losing the key man in Moise Kean. And a lot of the investments that Fiorentina made from last season, well, at least Goodmanson, for example, is probably not going to be there either. So at least he's going in, and if he has a say on the market, he could start to build a team that suits him. But there's definitely a lot of pressure on him, I think.
I tend to agree with you that there is a lot of pressure on him, and the team will only weaken. We've already heard that And we've seen, anyway, like they're signing a bunch of center backs from Empoli, for example. They got Viti. They're looking at Pinamonti potentially to replace Keane, who isn't on the same level, let's be real.
No.
The one thing that is going for Pioli is that he is the fourth manager to actually win the Serie A out of all 20 managers. In fact, there are four managers.
There's Sarri as well. There's Conte, exactly. Allegri, Sarri, Pioli.
Exactly. So Allegri has won it 6 times. Conte has won it 4 times. Sarri and Pioli have won it once each.
Yeah.
So that will definitely fuel his players with confidence. And there's also the parallel that can be drawn between Milan having Giroud as a target man when they won the league, and now Fiorentina having Dzeko as a target man, who, by the way, is still pretty active. We will talk about this, of course, when we talk more about the players. Okay? Yep. We'll give you some stats on how Dzeko did in the Turkish league, etc., etc., how many games he's played, because obviously he's 39 years old. You're wondering, like, is he still fit enough to play? Apparently so.
I think Stroppa to Venezia is a good one. I think any Serie B side that get their hands on Stroppa, just... It's a good idea, because Absolutely. He's a promotion specialist in that sense.
As is Pippo, and I feel like Palermo will be in Serie A next season.
Yep, and I think that is a strategic delayed move by Pippo, because I think Pippo... I saw people saying, it's because he knows his limits.
Mm.
I think Pippo's going to grow into being a very good coach.
Yeah.
And I think with Palermo, he has a very good project. So much like... Not going to compare him to Fabregas or anything like that, but just to draw a parallel, he can get a team promoted and perhaps stay there because they actually have the funding to build a team that he can use.
Exactly. After being way too underqualified to manage Milan and having that whole shocking experience, I think he's done really well to kind of like make sure he doesn't bite off more than he can chew.
Exactly.
And he's really building a name for himself in Serie B as a promotion specialist nowadays.
Benevento, Regina... Yeah.
We talked. He also promoted, I think, Venezia from Serie C, if I'm not mistaken. We covered it in the last episode. If I'm not mistaken, don't quote me on that one, actually. Mm-hmm. So Norbert asks, can Gattuso be the long-term coach of the national team?
The question on all our lips, Norbert. Before I give an answer, I just want to give Gattuso credit where it's due. Because... the problem with Gattuso is that it seems like in his career he's been regressing. Mm. You remember him at Milan. I am of the opinion that while the banter era was going on for Milan, Gattuso was the guy who got Milan dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
Gattuso was the manager that got Milan fans even thinking about top four.
One point, no?
Mm?
One point, and then the next season after
off.
The same.
One point off he was, and that's what led to his sacking and the appointment of Gianpaolo. Gianpaolo 2 months and Pioli came in, but a lot of that was the foundation of Gattuso, and I stand by that. He did a fantastic job in a club that was being burnt to the ground. Mm. Then he went to Napoli, and again, that infamous game against Hellas Verona, that by 1 point Juve got Champions League and not Napoli. Mm. And then since then, he's gone to smaller clubs and smaller clubs and smaller clubs, and I think it's his antics on the bench that are really getting him the most viewership. However, with that being said, I think he has certain qualities that when shit is going wrong, he could really bring a team together the same way he did at Milan. So his personality and his humor, Gattuso is one of the funniest guys in Serie A.
So
history.
Charismatic.
Exactly. His leadership qualities, his experience having won the World Cup is a factor. His high demands, his work ethic, and the fact that if you fuck up, he's probably going to put his hands on you. He's that kind of guy. And he'll scare the living shit out of you. Like, he is a guy that is going to get 100% out of the players. And I think, in international football, that is the most important thing. Because I don't think that to be an international football manager, you need to be the greatest tactician.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think that Scaloni and De La Fuente are two tacticians that we've never seen before. They're two good managers that are good with a squad and get the best out of their players. I think Gattuso can do that. The reason I think Gattuso isn't going to be a long-term solution for the Nazionale is because I think they're in a really tough situation right now, and they might not make it to the World Cup. It won't be Gattuso's fault.
But he'll be the scapegoat, right?
But he'll be the scapegoat, and then they'll go for someone like an Italian or whatever when they become available.
Yeah.
But I don't think he will be. I think in a certain way he can be, but he won't be.
Yeah. I think Gattuso has this reputation of being a very defensive coach who is very rigid, right?
He's not.
When in reality, just as we saw mostly at Napoli and Valencia, he's quite capable of flexible systems. He plays possession-based football at times. He's set up teams to press, nice transitions. But it is true that his teams bring intensity and structure when he's given time, right? I thought his time at Napoli was the best we've seen in his career. He had a 58% win rate and only missed out on Champions League, as we said, by 1 point. Extremely unlucky. Mm-hmm. Then after that, he went to Valencia and Marseille, where he had meh stints, and then went to Hajduk Split, where he, again, he had a 45% win rate. I don't think he did anything special over there.
And you look at, for example, Valencia, a team that have been on the decline for so long. Marseille, not quite sure what happened there, because we've seen managers do well at them. Of course, they've got the Convict 11, no? Marseille.
Convict 11 with De Zerbi leading the charge.
Exactly. And then Hajduk Split.
Must be a toxic workplace, huh, that place, man.
Bro.
You have De Zerbi taking off his trousers whenever you fuck up or when you piss him off. Apparently Kevin Prince-Boateng said that. He said that whenever De Zerbi, when he was at Sassuolo, would get upset or like angry that a routine or a drill didn't work, he'd just pull his pants down.
He'd be like yelling at him, start stretching his pants down.
How bizarre.
Bro, what does Allegri do? Allegri.
But with his jacket, right?
Not with his pants. Jacket, because he's on TV, bro.
So is De Zerbi. No, it's in training.
We've never seen his cock on TV. Let's put it that way. What do you think? Do you think Gattuso can be the long-term solution?
So before I give my definitive answer, I want to kind of monologue a bit more. So Italy have a bit of a history, right, when it comes to employing kind of these passionate, unifying figures, and like Lippi and Conte, who at the time weren't exactly the most tactically woke people, but they were more like people who brought structure and discipline and passion, right? Mm-hmm. So it's definitely on brand. And it is a player who will... He is a coach who will fill the players with confidence. Most of these guys would have seen him in 2006, right? Some of the older players nowadays. Think about that. Some of the older players.
Tonali is idol. Tonali is almost the centerpiece of this project.
Exactly. So maybe that he will command respect, right? However, I do think that this is a very bold, emotional, and high-risk move. It's a very proud move because they put all their eggs in the Italian basket, right? They didn't want to branch out. The Italian national team has never been coached by a manager who isn't Italian. So Mourinho, for example, being available for me is a no-brainer over here. But of course, they want to keep it Italian. So they went for the only people who are available. And these are the 2006 World Cup winning squad who were players at the time.
Yeah. I'm not going to pretend like I don't get it. That they want an Italian manager, because that is, as Mourinho would say, heritage. You want to keep heritage when it's there. My only fucking problem is how is Ancelotti at Brazil, and that annoys me, because they need a manager, and the greatest manager they've ever produced is coaching the Brazilian national team. That and Simone Inzaghi went to friggin Al Ahly.
Yeah, but he's getting that back, bro.
Or Al Hilal.
He's making
wherever,
like 20 million a year.
He's making 20 million a year, but Italy could have used a manager like him. Great in knockout competitions, made the Champions League final twice in 3 years, won two or three Coppa Italias, would have been fucking great. Knows how to use Di Marco, knows how to use Bastoni, knows how to use Acerbi, Barella, you know?
Maybe he doesn't trust them anymore after what happened. This calls from a question from Frank, who asks, which club has made the best and the worst new managerial appointments?
I told you I feel weird about my answer, because it sounds a little bit biased considering who I'm a fan of. But I'm just going to say it. Best Milan, worst Inter. but I'm going to explain why. Everyone relax.
I'm sure even the Inter fans listening might agree with you, bro. I mean, Kivu has a lot to prove, but on paper, it's a very bold move.
Exactly, because Inter have had a, you could say, successful, dominant, maybe not, because they've only won two Scudetti in the past 5-6 years.
Yeah.
But they've played their best football in the past 6 years. Keep in mind, they were in the banter era as well. Then they won it with Conte, they won it with Simone.
Yeah.
So they've had dominant, experienced Italian managers. They had the greatest domestic league manager probably the Serie A has ever seen in Conte. Because what Conte does is ridiculous. His stats are ridiculous. And if he hasn't beaten Allegri yet, he'll probably beat him very soon. Where was I going with this? And then they had Simone Inzaghi, who had all that experience at Lazio, mm-hmm. right? And was a player as well. So they had those two great managers. Now, from having all of that experience, they're going to a young and experienced manager who, I mean, even... I think only Pizzacane and Cuesta have less experience in Serie A than him.
Cuesta we haven't introduced yet. I've just realized we missed him. He is the new 29-year-old manager of Parma.
Which is
He was the assistant of Arteta at Arsenal for 5 years.
I have high hopes for him.
So for Inter, the thing is, if this was portrayed as a transitional period, it would be okay. But the fact that the management has come out and said that expectations remain the same just seems unrealistic to me. What do you mean expectations remain the same? You expect silverware when he didn't win one last season?
This is Inter's problem, because even when it was super early days, Simone came out and said, we're going for the treble. Mm-hmm. And I think in moments like this, if you set the fans' expectation too high and then you deliver an alright product, the fans are going to turn against you. But if you set the bar a bit low and then you do alright, then people are going to be pleased.
Yeah.
And it's a fact, I think, that it is a transitionary period.
Yeah.
Because if anyone with the right mind looks at what went wrong with Inter last year, trophyless season, got to the very end of everything, almost, barring the Coppa Italia semi-final, they know that it is a squad issue. They know that it's an issue of them not having enough budget to invest in young talent and not showing their young talents enough faith, because they're all out on loan, this and that, and playing these old players and burning them down to the ground over and over again. This is a transitionary period where they're bringing in Kivu. I think they have a new wave of young players, not a new wave of young players, but some are returning from loan and they could really utilize them. I think they could bring some more young players in. And I think they could start to grow with Kivu, and Kivu is known to use young players. He's worked to the Primavera. So I think it is definitely a transitionary period. They've had all that Serie A experience with those managers, and now they're going somewhere with no experience. Of course it's a transition. They're going to go win the league? I'd be very surprised.
Agreed. And your point, by the way, about Inzaghi coming out and saying, of course we're going for the treble when he should be bringing calm. On the other hand, your best managerial signing, Allegri, is notorious, no? For being 6 points clear in the league. They ask him, can you win the league? And he goes, the objective is top four. You know, he just pisses everyone off. Like, you know, you need one more point to win the league. There are 6 games left. And he's going, the objective is top four. You
know? I think, and then best is Milan. I think for the goal that they've set out, it's the most accurate one.
Mm.
I think the best managerial move was Napoli keeping their hands on Conte. The best thing Serie A team has done in that sense. I chose Milan Allegri as a top because I think if Milan's goal is to stabilize the ship and to get back to top four.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for that you need a league manager, a manager that knows the league best, a manager that has just taken a year off and has a huge chip on his shoulder and wants to fuck Juventus up. And is just a top four specialist.
Mm-hmm.
So I think... And he's also quite familiar with the club. Obviously won the Serie A with the team. So I think Milan are in safe hands with Allegri.
Mm-hmm.
And Tare.
Yeah, yeah. Just to play the devil's advocate, or to give a different answer, rather. I'm going to say Atalanta had the worst managerial appointment in Juric.
Nice.
While, of course, Cagliari and Parma had risky ones because they appointed such young profiles with no experience. You remember, Parma and Cagliari are going into next season with coaches who have never coached a senior team before. So as the main man, which is absolutely insane. One is 29 years old, the other one is 39 years old. And we're talking about how Cagliari's one is young because he's 39.
Yeah,
Pizzacane. While Parma's new guy, Cuesta, is 29 years old, 1995.
That's crazy.
Absolutely crazy.
He's your age, bro.
Yeah.
So you're a few months older than
absolutely.
Him, actually.
Give me a job. Crazy. Yes, I'll say it's Atalanta because it was an uninspired move, in my opinion. They played it safe because, you know, he's someone who's kind of has similar principles to Gasperini, who has worked with Gasperini, who has played for Gasperini. But in my opinion, this was the perfect opportunity for them to branch out and try something new. Mm-hmm. But instead, they overthought it and they were afraid, you know, of maybe changing things too much. And they went for someone who has just come off and a god-awful two spells. One in the Premier League where he's literally been ridiculed for his win percentage, which I don't have right
worst
now.
Worst club in Premier League history.
Yeah. And, of course, what he did at Roma as well, which was a little bit harsh. He wasn't given much time, and the Piazza was absolutely fuming at him from the get-go. Yes, and when it comes to best, to give a different answer, I'm going to go with Lazio and Fiorentina.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Lazio and Fiorentina simply because they managed to get their hands on managers who are successful in the league, who know the league well. Of course, Lazio have gone back to Sarri, so people might see it as a step backwards. I particularly don't see it as a step backwards. I see it as kind of a step forward to aim for a European spot, because if they get a European spot, which is their target now, it'll be an upgrade to this season. Mm-hmm. Whereas Fiorentina as well, maybe this is what they need to actually finish above a Conference League spot.
Yeah, I have as an honourable mention, I feel like I have to mention him, Gasperini to Roma.
Oh yeah.
Is if they're patient with him and they give him the 3 years that he's contract bound for, then I think they'll see the benefits of getting someone like Gasperini.
Absolutely. Ranieri's comments during Gasperini's unveiling were really weird. Have you seen them?
No.
Let me see if I can find it exactly.
Like, weird how?
He basically said he doesn't like him. Ranieri said he doesn't like Gasperini. It was bizarre. He's a strong character, he's upfront and says what he means without beating around the bush. Sometimes that can mean being blunt, but we all have our own character. I've really been blunt with you. I can't quite find it, it's quite a long interview, but go look it up, it's hilarious. Ranieri basically says that he's not a big fan of Gasperini's personality.
Excellent.
Really good. Really good introduction.
Really good. Welcome to the club.
Welcome to a club where the fans are already extremely skeptical of you as a man, you know, as your personality.
Especially after the Indica thing.
Yeah.
Fucking well done, Ranieri.
Yeah, definitely didn't pile the pressure on them.
Shall we jump to the next?
Yes. The next is a question from Luca, who asks, is Kevin De Bruyne the missing piece for Napoli to go deep in the Champions League, or will age catch up by winter? Now, first of all, it's important to address that De Bruyne is 33 years old, granted. So I looked into his stats of how he performed last season in the Premier League, or rather how many games he featured, because if he features, he's going to play well, De Bruyne. He's that type of player. So he had 28 games last season, 28 appearances. 19 of those games he started. He had 4 goals and 7 assists. While in the Champions League, he also managed to play 7 games, starting 5 of them and not contributing any goals. I looked into his injury record. He seems to have a recurring hamstring problem that keeps him out. This season, it kept him out for 12 games. This season, in 23-24, it kept him out for 30 games. And in 2021, he also had the same issue keeping him out for 7 games, and that seems to be the main physical issue that he has. What do you think, bro?
So I think to say he is the missing piece, I think he is a missing piece. I think that Napoli don't have a player with his quality. I think few teams in the world have players of De Bruyne's quality. In my opinion, De Bruyne is, if not the most complete midfielder in Premier League history, he's up there in the top 3. Because he can play as a 6, he can play as an 8, and he can play as a 10. Incredible range of passing. the way that he controls his passes as well, bro. Like those through passes
the driven
across
ones, right?
the floor, the driven yeah, ones that yeah, he, yeah. that curve at the last second just perfectly around a player are mental. Mm-hmm. He reads the game superbly. He's coming to a league where football's a bit slower. Perhaps he'll get injured less. Perhaps he'll have some more time on the ball. Perhaps he can dictate play a little bit more. And he adds a significant amount of depth to quality depth to their midfield. If they start with Scott, Lobotka, De Bruyne, that means if they manage to keep their hands on Anguissa, Anguissa's still there, Gilmore's still there, Billing is still there, and that's incredible depth, which now where they're playing in all those competitions, it makes sense. If they keep De Bruyne, to play De Bruyne, you kind of nowadays need to treat him a little bit like glass.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if you're winning a game, they can't use him the same way they used Stanislav Lobotka last season.
Of course.
They need to, if it's the 60th minute, they've got a 2-goal advantage, take him out mm-hmm. and send him to the recovery room immediately.
Absolutely.
Because he's 33, which isn't insanely old, especially with today's kind of physios and whatever. But the schedule is what it is, and his injury record is what it is, so you have to look after him.
Absolutely, and I would go as far as to say, hardly ever start him. Start him in big games only, you know. Save him as kind of a chess piece, you know, a wild card. You know, you won the league without him. You don't essentially need him. He'll just give you that edge in big games, in big Champions League fixtures, where you can't open up a low block against Lecce. You bring on Kevin De Bruyne who can spread the play. But I think if they just start playing him from the start and giving him 80 to a full 90 every single week, they're playing with fire, I think.
I think they can start him. I don't think it's that detrimental that you can never play him for 80 minutes kind of thing. I think especially now it's going to be interesting to see what striker they bring in.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
with Lukaku, it's one thing if Lukaku's starting. But if they get Darwin Nunes, then De Bruyne has to be on the pitch because De Bruyne will feed that guy like he's a 12-year-old in a zoo, bro. Darwin Nunes, the amount of opportunities he'll get if De Bruyne's on the pitch is amazing. And Darwin Nunes is the kind of guy that's constantly making runs in behind
Absolutely,
the defense.
Yes.
Unlike Lukaku, who you play through Lukaku.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you don't play to Lukaku like a Ted Lasso, what Jamie Tart said.
It's true, no, very good point. And Darwin Nunes has a reputation of being very wasteful, but in reality he creates so many opportunities for himself. It's true his finishing is a bit wayward at times, but he just creates so much space and so many chances for himself.
He'll get, with De Bruyne on the pitch, he'll get 4 to 5 chances a game, man. I'm confident about that.
Uh-huh. But yes, definitely Conte will have to manage his minutes and kind of take into consideration that players will be running for him.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'm sure he will do that. Yes. So while we're on the topic of players coming to the league, these are some confirmed transfers, right? So we have De Bruyne. We've got Edin Dzeko, mm-hmm. who's been signed by Fiorentina. We've got Martin Butarina, who was signed by Como. Petar Sucic and Luis Henrique to Inter. Luca Marianucci to Napoli, of course, from Empoli. Stanciu from Saudi, I believe, to Genoa. He's the guy who scored...
Romania, right?
Yeah.
Scored
that goal in the Euros. And the commentator went mental. Stanciu!
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that guy. Another guy whose name is a disaster, bro. There are letters I've never seen in my life in his name.
Albert Grombeek.
Albert Grombeek.
That's on Serie A Spotlight. That's the correct pronunciation, bro. Grombeek.
Grombeek. Grombeek.
Mm-hmm.
Grombeek to Genoa as well. And then Mattia Viti to Fiorentina. I'll be giving you a bit of a breakdown on these guys. So we'll start with Dzeko, of course, who nowadays is 39 years old. He played 35 league games in Turkey last year with Fenerbahce. He started 24 of them. He scored 14 goals and got 4 assists. Not a bad season. And 24 starts, 14 goals, 4 assists is pretty good.
It's fire.
Yeah. The season before, he played 36 games. He started 34 of them. He scored 21 goals and got 3 assists. And of course, the last time we saw him in Serie A with Inter in 2021-22, he played 33 games, 18 starts, 9 goals, 3 assists. So there's definitely still a natural over there. And with Dzeko, you get a professional man. You get someone who isn't often injured, who always makes himself available, who's always in tip-top condition, just ready to go, and who is smart enough to still operate despite his age, to still be effective.
Completely agree. I think positioning-wise, physically, and just his eye for goal and the way that he poaches in and around the area, I think don't expect him to have the link-up play that perhaps he used to have back in the day, used him more like a target man. But at Inter, for example, three seasons ago, when they had just lost Lukaku after winning it with Conte, and they brought in Dzeko as the budget replacement, he was excellent. He was fantastic at them. I really, really rated him. He's older. Racking up those goals in Turkey isn't fucking easy.
No.
So he could very much come in and get 10 goals this season.
Yeah, and that might be just what they need. And remember that Dzeko is also a very good support striker, so he empowers those around him.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting and very excited to see Dzeko and Pioli, actually, because... Hey. As we said before, of course, he had such success with Giroud. So, Como have also signed Baturina, who's 22 years old. He operates primarily as a creative playmaker with excellent ball control, tight space dribbling, vision, passing range, and long shots. And he frequently initiates key chances as well. He's a product of Dynamo Zagreb's academy. He made 165 appearances for the club's first team, contributing to 22 goals and lifting 4 league titles, 2 Croatian Cups and Super Cups, 2 Super Cups as well.
All right.
He is established in Europe too. He has 38 appearances in UEFA competitions, 3 goals and a standout performance against Milan and Monaco in the Champions League.
Yep.
Last season, he had 4 goals and 11 assists. So this, once again, is a good... poach for Como. You can see what they're doing. They're going for someone who also has European experience. You can tell that tells you a lot about their ambitions, right? And I can't lie to you and say I've watched him play, but from what I've seen, he seems very exciting. And
no,
I think
and if he was selected by Fabregas, like the same way Kakere and Diaw, we had never seen them play before, and they absolute beasts. Like they came in and left nothing to the imagination. They showed us everything that they're capable of.
Yeah, and judging by how Fabregas likes to play with essentially 4 10s in his team, this will be
perfect. You
know, a match made in heaven, perfect. I think. Yes. Which takes us to Inter, who have signed Luis Henrique and Petar Sucic. Luis Henrique featured in the Club World Cup and left and got mixed reviews from fans.
Mm-hmm.
His career path has been Botafogo, Marseille, Inter. At Marseille, he had a breakout season where he scored 7 goals and got 7 assists last year. He's a strong dribbler, very close ball control, great ball carrier, very athletic, versatile and dynamic. He plays on the left, but can also play on the right too. I've seen people, though, compare him to, oh my God, another Dalbert. I've seen Inter fans say, but he's only 23 years old. There's obviously going to be a period of adaptation, right?
That's it. And also doesn't exactly fit positionally at Inter, so he might be being played slightly out of position here and there. Inter notoriously play with 2 strikers and the left wing back and the right wing back. So being a natural one-on-one dribbling winger is the same way Jeremy Boga didn't work out at Atalanta, because they were playing a 3-5-2 then, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. Even though Kivu does sometimes like to play with attacking midfielders, so maybe
4-2-1, right?
He can put in a shift over there. Then we have Petar Sucic, who's an entirely different profile. He's 21 years old.
Been compared to Brozovic, this gentleman.
Yes, he is known for his strong defensive capabilities and his ability to distribute the ball effectively. He is the cousin of Luka Sucic, who plays for Real Sociedad.
Okay.
Yes, he won the league, the Croatian Cup and the Super Cup at Dynamo Zagreb as well. 26 appearances, 5 goals and 2 assists last season. Yes, very exciting times for Inter, or very anxious times for Inter, depending on how you look at it from the perspective of an Inter fan, of course, but they are bringing in young players and coaches.
Yeah.
Marianucci has joined Napoli. We know him from Empoli. He's versatile, he can play centre-back, right-back, he's physically strong, he's quite quick as well. He played 1,068 minutes last season, starting 12 games, and he had a very good performance in that Coppa Italia game against Juventus as well. And then Viti, of course, joined Fiorentina from Empoli. He's 23 years old, 30 appearances last season, and even got himself a jolly old goal. He's known for his strong presence, his technical ability, his proactive defending, and has been compared to former Empoli player Daniele Rugani.
Top player, I rate Viti.
Yeah, he's good, he's good. Fiorentina have a few too many defenders at the moment, but...
That tells you something about maybe the future of someone like Pongracic or Komutso.
Komutso
is highly sought after. Yeah. Milan are in for him, and Leoni. It's like, it depends how many defenders Milan lose, depends on how many defenders they go for, obviously. Yeah.
So, after this, of course, it's important to mention that Bijol has left us, a Fantacalcio favourite. Udinese is rock at the back, he is off to Leeds.
Yeah, and very dominant in the air for Udinese, and even put in certain shifts at defensive midfield last season.
Yeah. Theo Hernandez seems to be joining Al Hilal.
He's opened up to the idea. Yes. So if they reach personal terms with Milan, it's a done deal. For 30 million, he's gone. 25 plus 5 plus, I believe it's 3 million in bonuses that are very easy to achieve, and then 2 million that are a bit trickier to achieve. So it might end up being 28 million.
So that's a pretty good deal considering. I mean, of course, it sucks because Milan could have got upwards of 70 million if they sold him last season, perhaps. But
maybe 50.
But of course, the fact that he has 1 year remaining on his contract, it 30 million or whatever is not too bad.
And he's not coming off exactly the best season
ever. I think he pissed everyone off.
Theo will go down in history as one of the great defenders of Milan.
Yeah.
Definitely, he's obviously the highest
the
scoring
most unique
defender
of Milan.
The most unique, really fun to watch. I have his shirt. I adore Theo. He scored that coast-to-coast goal in front of our very eyes in the San Siro, pretty much to win Milan the league and beat Atalanta. Theo will be loved. Those that are obviously overly criticizing Theo, he served his purpose. We won a league with Theo, got to a Champions League semi-final. Last season wasn't it. I think his work ethic, you could tell he wasn't happy anymore. I'm happy off the pitch issues. I like that he's warmed up to the idea of Al Hilal and he isn't screwing Milan over, despite there being a World Cup around the corner. So thank you, Theo, for leaving at least gracefully, right?
Yeah,
we know how the club is being operated.
Yeah.
Theo could have made a fucking scene, bro.
I mean, we've seen the likes of like Bennacer, for example, handing in a transfer request on the final on transfer deadline day, you know, forcing Milan to cooperate. So yes, this seems to be an amicable ending.
Nothing but love for Theo.
Yes, absolutely.
Nothing but love.
Cagliari are cooking. They have confirmed Adopo, Caprile and Piccoli, three of them.
Fucking beasts, man.
And they confirmed them until 2029. Now that's
insane.
Goalkeeper, an important midfielder and an important striker. So
Take me back to Sardinia, bro. Take me back to Sardinia and toss me in that pitch.
Absolutely, man. What a vibe. Camarda of AC Milan, the young baby bomber, who has been all over the news for like 2 years already for scoring crazy goals in youth tournaments, etc., has even scored in the Champions League, but had it called off, right?
Yes,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yes,
it was a massive moment. He has been loaned out to Lecce, which I think is excellent, to be honest, because Lecce will be playing with Di Francesco.
So I see you didn't read the second sentence. There's an option to buy.
There's
an option to buy.
Of how much?
I didn't... It's not disclosed yet, but there's an option to buy, but Milan will have a buyback.
Okay.
It would probably be like 20 million to buy him, but
and then
Milan
22
can
million
buy
to buy
him back for 22 million, which is a hilarious thing.
Yeah.
But like, just make it a dry loan.
Yeah.
Just make it a dry loan. He's the future. He's 16 years old. Like I don't fucking.
But you
it.
Know what that gives you, man? That gives you potentially 20 million and a guarantee to buy him back.
Yeah,
when he's
you're
ready.
You're spending the money, you're losing 2 million.
Oh, yes, it's true. But you're in the long run, you're spending 2 million and then you're losing 2 million and you're getting a player who's been primed, who's been given experience, who's had time to grow consistently. Like Milan can't confirm playing once a week. When's he going to play Camarda, you know? He doesn't really have much time
No, I like that he's out on loan.
Yeah.
I hate the option to
the
buy.
The option to buy, yeah.
The option to
the
buy.
Buyback, is, the buyback stupid. makes it an easier better, pill to swallow.
But it's
yes,
not exactly...
Yeah, it's not...
Whatever.
Yeah,
these yeah. number guys must know what they're doing, right?
Yeah. yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we also have players who have returned to their parent club from loan. We've got the Esposito brothers, Francesco Pio and Sebastiano. They've returned to Inter. Andrea Pinamonti has returned to Sassuolo. Salemakers and Adli have returned to Milan. Follorunshu and Zanoli have returned to Napoli, while Thiago Giallo has returned to Juve and Stefano Turati has returned to Sassuolo. We have a question from Frank. What is best for Pio Esposito next season? Stay at Inter or go out on loan again? If to go on loan, which club is best suited to him?
Should I start?
Yeah.
Stay at Inter.
Yes.
Stay at Inter.
Why,
they play three competitions.
Mm.
They need a backup striker. Ideally one that can grow with the club. Someone that has a hard work ethic, eye for goal, well-rounded, big physical 19-year-old. He's perfect. He's deployable. And I think for rotation, better having him than Arnautovic, Correa, or Taremi.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's in a good position with a manager that knows him, that has probably coached him at youth levels,
mm-hmm.
knows his skill set. He's coming off a great season. He's playing in the Club World Cup for them. He's making features. Stay.
Fair.
And then if clearly it's not working, you can loan him out in January.
Yeah,
but
fair enough.
Stay.
Fair enough. Interesting. I think it would also be potentially good for him to go to one of these sides that's just been promoted, maybe like a Pisa, you know, and kind of just have a year grinding in Serie A, getting a feel for
fair.
It, you know.
Fair.
That might also be a solid situation. But, you know, I think he might be a bit too good. He might even deserve something a bit better.
I think
that.
With the right service
yeah,
and with
Parma, bro.
DeMarco, Calhanoglu service, I think he'll grow to be a top striker by the time he's 22, 23. He'll have people offering bags for him.
Mm.
I think he's very good, man.
He's good, he's good.
He's super, good. Super well-rounded and calm and ahead of his years for 19 years old. And physically, he's a beast as well.
Maybe they should loan him out with an option to buy.
Exactly.
uh-huh. What do you think of Salemakers and Adli returning to Milan? Apparently, Allegri likes Salemakers.
I like that Allegri likes Salemakers, and I knew that Allegri would like Salemakers. It's like if Allegri was my friend and I had to get him something for Christmas, I'd get him Salemakers. you know what I mean? I had a feeling that he'd like someone that can play as a winger, play as a midfielder, play as a wing-back kind of thing.
Yeah.
He's versatile. He's obviously a fan of the club. I like Salemakers is deployable, and if the 4-3-3 doesn't work out, well, firstly he's a good sub for the right wing and left wing department.
Yeah, yeah.
He's torn up defenses for Milan in those positions and for Roma alike. And if Milan switch to a 3-5-2 or a 3-4-3, he can definitely do a job at wing back.
Can you imagine Salemakers on the right, Jimenez on the left?
Yes.
The attack of the clones?
Yes, bro.
Yeah. Adli, I'm interested to see, but I highly doubt there's a place for him in Allegri's system, to be honest with you. But I'm curious to see. I mean, he's when it comes to like the midfield profiles that Allegri likes, I see like Ruben Loftus-Cheek maybe making a weird comeback,
mm-hmm.
or Musa, you know, because he likes these ball carriers.
Uh-huh.
So
I'm not sure Adli is of this level. I'm not sure.
Unfortunately,
he is. I'm not sure.
Because he's so good on the ball and in possession, but then he doesn't give you enough of it. Eh?
Exactly.
Players kind of play around him.
I don't think he's of this level, unfortunately.
We'll see if Follorunshu as well and Zanoli can become staples at Napoli. Follorunshu had a bit of a back and forth with Conte and was loaned out. We'll see if that's resolved. Thiago Giallo's at Juve. That's interesting as well. We'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
And nice to see Sassuolo getting a little bit of a boost with Pinamonti and Turati, man.
Right.
Very well handled situations with the relegation.
Absolutely.
They told them, stay in Serie A another year. We'll be back. See you in a year.
Very smart.
Yeah.
Very
True.
Smart. Good business.
Good business. Now, up next, we've got Luca. He asks and states, Vanja Milinkovic-Savic to United isn't confirmed, eh? No, Luca.
This is Luca's voice. This is exactly what Luca sounds like.
Vanja Milinkovic-Savic to United is not confirmed, right?
That's how it is. We love you, Luca.
Regardless.
Regardless of where he goes, he says, I think Torino will go from mid-table to becoming the next Empoli. Now, here I strongly disagree with you, bro, because Torino have got Baroni, which also is a potential answer to Frank's question as the best acquisition on a from a managerial point of view. I don't think they'll be the next Empoli. I think Torino are trending upwards right now.
What do you think? I think Baroni is, since Juric, an upgrade. Because obviously they had that kind of gamble with Vanoli. Kind of worked, kind of didn't at the same time. Yeah. It was a very mixed bag.
It was a weird season.
Baroni is top. Baroni is a Lazio level coach. He was at Lazio last season. And I think he'll really, really help the Torino with his balanced style of play. I think, and Luca probably used the knowledge of Vanni and Ricci are almost certain to leave, right? And Cairo isn't exactly a guy that likes spending money, right? So, fair enough. But I think certain changes can be made. I think there's still a lot of quality. Aside from Vanya and Ricci, there's bloody Duvan Zapata up front, Shea Adams,
Elmas,
Cassidy.
They're
not going anywhere. They're not getting relegated. They're not going to be in Serie B next season. Interesting to see how Cairo handles the arrivals and departures. Interesting to see what happens there. Because Juric pretty much squared up with him in a car park once because he wasn't replacing Belotti.
Yeah, absolutely. Luca's final take is Roma fans will turn on Gasperini by Christmas, especially after he benches Dybala for tactical reasons.
Now that I can see happening, Luca.
that's a very possible thing that can happen, to be honest.
He'll divide the fan base.
I think Gasperini has been given a long contract over here with the idea that, like, listen, we're going to potentially introduce a kind of, like, youth team as well in the lower leagues to mirror Gasperini's system. I think they're literally trying to create what already exists at Atalanta. They're trying to mirror that ideology, and that's why they gave him a bit of a long term contract. So I think while this is possible, especially considering how Gasperini tends to carry himself and the comments he passes at times, I think though they will try to keep him on for some time. I think this is a long term project, to be honest.
I pray to the Friedkins that they handle this situation amicably and they don't rush to conclusions, because they gave him a 3-year contract. That is the right thing to do. Now, if he underperforms for the first 10 games of the season, the Friedkins can very much let him go. They're those kinds of owners. It's the way that they have run the club so far.
Yeah.
But they should remain calm. Because Gasperini is a long-term project.
Yes,
look
agreed.
At what he did with Atalanta over 11 years, man.
Agreed.
And or however long he was there.
Yeah, and it is... I think as well Gasperini needs to kind of handle the high profiles with a little bit more grace as well than how he's handled them. You know, he has a tendency of picking on the best players on the team. I don't know if it's a pride thing. Uh-huh. But anyway... let's move on to Andrew Batman's question. His essay. It was a bit too long to fit at the bottom, so we're sorry that you're not currently seeing it on your screen. But he asks, Genoa in season 23-24 and Como in 24-25 both reached 49 points. That's 1.3 points per game, which made them in consecutive seasons the highest ranked promoted sides in the top European divisions. Is there something about the Italian system that makes that possible, or was it just a fluke, based on these specific teams? Who out of Sassuolo, Pisa and Cremonese has the best chance to repeat this success?
So, just to also say, Monza the season before...
had done it too, right?
...were newly promoted and they got 52 points. So, clearly, some of the teams that are coming up and the past three... teams the past two seasons, the teams that have come up have been doing superbly well. Let me just fact check myself, because Monza might have been promoted the year before. No, I'm right. I think the trend is there's a new wave of owners in Serie A, investing in upcoming teams and putting together solid projects, right? Mm-hmm. We saw that with Genoa, with 777 Group, that of course they fell apart and now they have the Romanian ownership. The same, obviously, with Monza, with the Berlusconi, when he started putting together the next frontliners of Italy, essentially. And we're also seeing it with Como now, with the tobacco company, whatever it is, with all of those legends on the board. So
there are Yarum Group.
There are very good projects coming through from Serie B to Serie A. It's attracting a lot of American investors and a lot of football lover companies investing. So I think that plays a large part. And I also think that these new ownerships find it a bit easier to compete from a budget perspective with the bigger teams. I think the fact that Monza did what they did, that Como did what they did, and that Genoa did what they did, bringing in all of these players in their first season back in Serie A, shows that they can compete with some of the bigger teams. You see Como putting in a bid. Now, Como are a bit of an exception because they're loaded, but putting in a 40 million bid for Theo Hernandez in January. Milan accepted it immediately. Like, it was crazy. I think most likely the ones that will do well next season are, like we've been saying before, Sassuolo. I feel like they have a good project. They've handled going down to Serie B very, very well. They got back up immediately. They managed to keep their top players, and now they even got some players back who have Serie A experience last season. The following season, it'll be Palermo.
Yeah, I think so too. I would say the same thing. I think Pisa and Cremonese go up and back down, to be honest. Pisa need major upgrades. I think they're the least likely to stay up.
Let's relax, because the transfer season isn't even open yet.
Just judging, of course, by what date is it today? The 24th of June, of course. And Cremonese have a solid project going, but they didn't score as many as they should have, and they conceded a few too many as well.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to his first question, which is very interesting, I think that Serie B is extremely tactical when it comes to a second division. You know, it's not the case in many countries where the second division of a football league is so tactical. You know, you look at the Championship, for example, it's so chaotic and physical most of the time, and end-to-end. Mm-hmm. Serie B is very tactical, so it kind of primes you, right? If you get promoted to Serie A, tactically you're there.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the right pieces in play. Genoa and Como got promoted and kept their players. There was no fire sale. They didn't ruin their own team, you know, which is a massive thing. So they were kind of already planning to kind of go up and stay up, you know. There's no panic selling when the value is high, you know, like, or any of that. And they both had good projects, as you said. Them 7-7 Partners were back in Genoa at the time. They were financially very strong. The Diarum Group with Como, City Group with Palermo for next season. So, absolutely, yes. And Berlusconi with Monza 3 years ago, or whenever that was. So, yes, bro, I think that Sassuolo are the best to repeat this. They're going to come up and stay up.
I'd put money that Palermo would be the next ones.
Yeah. Brandon asks, how realistic are Como's chances of pushing for European football, and do we think there is a chance that Cesc will stay there beyond next season? He adds, also, not really a question, but I hope we see Camarda playing regularly in Serie A. Hopefully he gets a loan. There you go, bro. Smacked with an option to buy as well.
Do you think, Como, it's realistic that they get European football?
So next season...
Can I just list down the teams that are like the top eight of Serie A? Napoli, Milan, Inter, Juve, Lazio, Roma, Atalanta, Fiorentina and Bologna.
So I think next season, no, it's unlikely. Not impossible, but it's unlikely, right? I would say this is realistic in 2-3 years' time. To be honest, I think Como are once again trending upwards. New infrastructure is being built, new training center, stadium upgrades, strong branding, big names on the board. You've got Fabregas, you've got Thierry Henry, you've got the players that they attracted, these young talents joining Como. So I think that in Dele Alli, Kakare, Sergio Roberto, Cutrone, and Verdi in Serie B, you know. So I think, yes, that in 2-3 years' time, we'll be seeing Como probably pushing for a European spot. Next season, unlikely, though. It's difficult.
I'm going to be that guy to say it's unlikely, but Como ended the season so strongly, man, last year. Last year, they ended the season. They had a 6-game winning streak and 8 undefeated in a row. They beat Napoli, Fiorentina, Roma, and Atalanta. Mm-hmm. And they were super consistent. Their defense was so tight. And you know that in Serie A, if your defense is tight, you're going to have a great season, no matter what. I was listening to one of the Leicester players speak. I forgot his name. I forgot which one it was, rather. It might have been Vardy. And he was saying that they knew that they were going to do well in the league, maybe not win the league, but they knew they were going to do well from the last four matches of the previous season. Because they were like, it clicked. It clicked and they felt really confident, really good. They were playing exactly what they wanted to and the spirits were super high. I think because Como ended the season so strong, it puts them in an even better position for next year. I think there's belief in the project, I think there's belief in the group of players, and there's belief in the coach for sure.
Absolutely.
My worry is that it's probably better that Cesc stays on and he gets them Europe in 3 years than if he just up and gets them Europe next year, because that means he'll probably leave.
So this was my question for you. Do you think Fabregas is more likely to stay if Como overperform or underperform? Because if they overperform, of course, clubs will be after him. They'll be all over him. And we already saw that an Inter offer tempted him. If they underperform, he might think to himself, it's time to try somewhere else.
No, he'll leave if he overperforms. He'll leave to bigger and better. He'll leave to win the Champions
League. But what is overperforming? I think overperforming for them is finishing in a Conference League spot, right? Because they have to finish above where they...
Yes, if he gets Europe, it's
like... Wouldn't he want to be the guy on the sideline with Coman Europe?
That's always the yes, but these teams, if they don't, if you don't tell them yes this season and they get a manager that lasts 3-4 years at them, you've shot yourself in the foot. Yeah. So a lot of managers find it hard to turn down Real Madrid. They find it hard to turn down Liverpool, Arsenal. I don't know, is the fact of the matter. But I think if he's not performing well, he'll take the responsibility and go to the trenches with the team. That's the kind of guy I think Fabregas is, at least.
My point of view is if he, against all odds, gets a European spot, man, next year, I think that there's no moving him from that team. I think he'll want to be that guy building the project. I think he'll see how incredibly quick they've achieved these goals that were long-term, and he'll be like, what is the limit over here?
I hope so.
You know?
Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Time will tell. Now, we have a question about Morata, which I seem to have lost.
If you want, I have it.
Yes, please.
Matthias asks, can you grade every purchase of Morata, please?
Thank you.
And then he adds, in all honesty, I want to hear your thoughts on the Milan Futuro debacle and that strategy in general. There's talks of Roma Under 23 project, and I don't really know how I feel about it. Let's start with Morata. I believe you've prepared something for us.
So in 2014, he went from Real Madrid to Juve for 20 million. And for me, this is a strong A.
I think that was where Morata played his best football, man, at Juve.
Yeah, he scored clutch Champions League and Serie A goals. He helped them reach the final in 2015. And it was quite a bargain at 20 million. Of course, the classic minor flaw is that he wasn't extremely consistent in the league, which is always the case with him. Then, of course, Real Madrid bought him back in 2016 for 30 million. What would you grade this?
I mean, when he returned to Real, he didn't become that starting formidable figure that they wanted. Benzema was still there, and it was hard to displace him. I think Real just saw that he was doing so well at Juve, they wanted to bring him back home.
As a second striker, right?
As a second striker, I guess I'll give this a C.
I'll give it a B, because at first I thought C, then I looked into it, and he got 20 goals in 2016, 2017, which is all right. And they sold him at a profit, which is...
Okay, so that's a B. Yes, it's a B. You're right, you're right.
Then from Real Madrid, he went to Chelsea for 65 million in 2017.
F. He failed at Chelsea, bro. He had a good start. He had the first three games. They're like, holy
That's how he always is. Even
we signed what Torres was supposed to be like.
24 goals in 72 games. He struggled mentally under pressure. He didn't adapt to the Premier League. And he was shipped off to Atletico Madrid in 2019 on loan with a 55 million obligation to buy in 2020.
This is where the allegation started.
That he's a
tool for money laundering. Yeah. Because after a season that... And Chelsea bought him for like 80 million, no?
Chelsea?
Uh-huh. How much did Chelsea buy?
So they bought him, according to this, for 65 million in 2017, from what I saw. Well,
huge money.
Yeah.
55 million to Atletico. It's a lot of money. I think he was quite good at Atletico. I think that's where he became, where he started to become that hustler we know today.
Mm-hmm.
The strong work ethic, a little bit of a leader. I don't think he's a 55 million striker at all, but I'll give that a C minus.
I see. He was useful, not prolific in big matches, expensive, decent fit tactically, but yes, that's it. Then from Atletico to Juve on loan with 10 million per year as a salary, 45 million option. I don't know, man. He scored 32 goals over two seasons.
It's a B. He did well in Serie A.
The cost of the loan was excessive for what they got, but I think B minus or C, to be honest.
B minus is good.
And then to Milan, where he did half a season. I mean, it was low cost, but...
To be fair, what do you want him to do in 6 months? Probably more.
Yeah.
But that's a D.
Yeah.
It's a D.
Yeah, sure. The fact that they had to look elsewhere for a striker is quite a disaster.
Yeah, Morata. The situation they were in, so a D is...
An absolutely bizarre player Morata is.
Really, man. Yeah. It helps him so much that he scored at Real Madrid.
Yes, this is not Real Madrid. The last you will hear of him in this episode, from my end.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, you'll wow, that's
yes, stay okay. tuned.
We'll see. And he also asked about Milan futuro. If you don't mind, I'll start and say...
Sure.
I think the project of having a youth team competing in a professional senior league is a good thing for any club. Because what you want to do is you want to get your talented youngsters competing with experienced players, competing with older players, and competing at a higher level than rather than playing against another bunch of 21-year-olds, so on and so forth. They need to feel the physicality of a 35-year-old Italian defender, centre-back, who does it as a full-time job. So I think it's genuinely a good idea for most teams. It's a good idea for teams, though, to run... They have to understand that when they do something like that, they're running another football club.
Mm-hmm.
It is not merely an extension of a club. Because if you want these guys to get promoted and play against Serie B level teams and to make a name for themselves and get loaned out to Serie A teams and you start building their profile like that, you can't have them go to Serie C and get relegated immediately. You can't be sacking the manager because he's not playing Maximilian Ibrahimovic.
Yeah.
You can't run it like it's the extension of your club and you do whatever the fuck you want with it. You can't just take Camarda out of it and give him the last 3 minutes of every single Milan game and then he can't play in the relegation playout because he doesn't have enough minutes in the league. You have to run it properly, like any project in the world. You can't just start a project and leave it there and let Bonera or whoever figure it the fuck out, or Abate or whoever the hell was there. You have to give it the care and you have to put the proper work into it. Appoint a good manager and just get the team playing well and looking after the players. Because look, it can do great things to players. Look at Zeroli, for example. It did great things for Zeroli's career. This is a team, by the way, with Liberali, Bartezaghi, Zeroli, Camarda, Jimenez. These are fantastic players. Torriani in goal. Maximilian Ibrahimovic is no joke either.
Yeah.
Voss. These are great players. I don't know that amount of players for any other Serie C team. You know, they're very, very promising.
Exactly.
The fact
that
now they're down to D and they're going to be playing against part-timers Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense now. Now, the only way to fix that is either if they get promoted immediately back to Chi. They have to get promoted immediately, or else Milan need to abandon fucking ship and start loaning out all these players, but then they're shooting themselves in the foot. So if you don't put the right care into a project like this, it can really shit on you.
While I do agree with you that it needs to be run almost as a separate kind of entity, of course the main club should always take priority.
Yes.
At the end of the day, this will act as a bridge between the Primavera and the first team. That's the whole point of these clubs, right? Milan last year, I think, saw the success of the Juve Next Gen model, and they tried to copy it in short notice with no clear plan to execute. They had no infrastructure, no coach. It was all late. It came off to me as a bit of a vanity project, the Milan Futuro. And in fact, it was a disaster. They got relegated. Now they have to play against Gigio the Plumber, you know, in Serie D, and risk him breaking the ankles of all the talented players. Not exactly great. So I think if the project is taken seriously, it can be very beneficial, and it can actually be a way to get players into your first team, or maybe improve your squad through the season and give you kind of somewhere to look, you know, like when you find a penny in your pocket, or like a €5 note, you know, in your pocket that you had no idea was there. It can give you one of those, or it can be a money making scheme, kind of like we saw with Juve, right, where you flip these players for a profit. Yeah, so I think Roma under Gasperini, to be honest, I would be viewing it positively, because he will definitely make sure that that's done well, because it's something that he would definitely know how to work around.
So it's only a good project if you treat it like a project, to put it that way.
Absolutely. Matt asks, what steps can Serie A implement in the next 5 years to prevent top talent being sold for bargain deals? Now, here, I think he's talking about...
Shit, I don't have this one for some reason.
No problem, bro. I think he's talking about the likes of, for example, Dorgu being sold from Lecce, even though I think they got quite a lot for him. The likes of, for example, Kayode being sold.
There was Coppola.
Coppola, exactly, to Brighton for 10 million is the most recent one. I think that... longer contracts too are a good thing. Buyout clauses with... or performance-based bonuses, not just flat figures. Sell-on clauses as well to profit as much as possible.
Sir, can I see the question again?
Of course, bro.
To give this one a bash.
It's, what steps can Serie A implement in the next 5 years to prevent top talent from being sold for bargain deals?
It's the bargain deals that's a problem. I think... Now, whether or not this question is angled for the actual Serie A or for the Nazionale... I think for the Nazionale, it's important that there are Italian players playing overseas, that there's Tonali in the Prem, and that there are players in La Liga, players in wherever. I think it's good for
the national team.
I think for Serie A, obviously losing top talent absolutely sucks, especially when they're not making the right money out of it. There are certain teams that have made a lot of money from it, so Atalanta have fucked United over with various deals. You know, Højlund, Traore is phenomenal, for example, but they made a pretty penny
back then, though,
as well.
Yeah, it was a ripoff.
With Bologna, with Xerxes as well. So there are teams that make good money, but then there are teams that like Milan, only making 55 million for Reinders is ridiculous. Like you're saying, I think sell-on clauses is definitely a good way to go about it, because you're maximizing, you're getting another stream of income that you can make, whether they flop or not. You can make more money out of it. But then I think it's, you have to be a better negotiator. Like, I think it solely goes down to the commercial department.
But you know what the problem is, bro? Many of these clubs don't have revenue streams. Most of them don't even own their stadiums.
It's,
you know,
a Serie A problem.
Teams need to operate.
But you're telling me.
In a long-term kind of manner, bro.
Furlani, Cardinale, Tare, whoever the fuck sat at the negotiation table with City pushed enough. Because Milan could have made 70 million.
But they also
Reinders.
Didn't have a sporting director when the deal was closed off.
Yes.
So that's the massive thing. Yeah, I mean, you realize that when Tarja came in, for example, Milan are playing hardball now with money on to Chelsea. Like, you're offering 10 million. Why don't you get that 10 million and put it where the sun don't shine, baby? You know? Yeah, so I think, bro, that that's basically it. That they need more revenue streams. They need more better marketing, more media deals, better sponsors.
Juve didn't even have a shirt sponsor this season.
Juve, and then at least they own their stadium, so they have that massive financial advantage. You know, so I think that's the next step that these clubs should go for. You know, if you don't want to have to sell your players to survive, to be able to operate in the market, to be able to fix the gaps in your team, maybe you should look elsewhere for income. I know it's easier said than done, don't get me wrong, but maybe reach out for potential investors or shareholders as well.
I recommend capital gains. I recommend the black market.
The black market, yes, very nice. Robert, there's a seeming lack of Italian players in the big Italian clubs. Do you guys think that there's the will to change that, or is this just the new normal? Does it have correlation with foreign owners? Now, if I may?
Yes, of course.
I think that there is a correlation with foreign owners, because especially in the case of Milan, for example, they didn't seem to understand the importance of homegrown players and players who understand the value of the badge and players who know the ins and outs of the league, especially managers who know the ins and outs of the league. So I think the importance of Italians is being realized right now by many clubs.
Yes.
But yes, it's true. We're seeing less and less. We're seeing fewer and fewer. Mm-hmm. Also, Italians, bloody expensive, man.
Yes.
Bloody expensive.
It's the same way an Englishman is expensive in England.
Yes.
Homegrown players are always going to cost you more, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. It's easier to look at the French league, find the next up-and-coming French player coming from one of these mental academies that they have in France, and you buy him on the cheap over there.
In a very physical league as well.
Uh-huh. And I think that this kind of goes hand in hand with the question we had before of Matt. There are positives and negatives. The negatives are obviously the style and the nostalgia and the identity of the league is slowly diminishing. By not having the Del Pieros, by not having the Tottis, the Maldini, so on and so forth, that are one club legends, Italian, surrounded with Italian talent. And then when they go to the Nazionale, all these guys have played together. There are a lot of positives of having young Italian players, but especially the fact that to them, that is the pinnacle. So that's where they're going to show their 100%. Their pinnacle is playing for Juve, Milan, Inter, or their boyhood club. The problem is the money, the problem is the league, the problem is that you go to the Premier League, you go to Saudi, you go to any of these other leagues, then you're going to make more money, you're going to get more sponsorship deals, you're going to live a good life. Okay, it won't be in Italy, but you know, you're not in a shit
you
place.
You get that bag, eh?
Either, but you make that bag. I think it comes with benefits as well.
Yeah.
Because your Italian players are getting European experience, which is good for the Nazionale, because Tonali knows how to handle things better than Barella sometimes, because he plays in the Premier League and he's seen certain different players play.
Yeah. It's good for the national team, definitely, to have people with different experiences in different leagues, even for a little bit of the extra insight when it comes to direct matches against opponents, right?
Yeah.
Certain opponents, familiar opponents. Yes, I do hope that this changes. I do hope to see more Italians. However, it's only a few teams where you don't see many. Yeah, because to be honest, you look at most games, I think from Atalanta have quite a few Italians. And Bologna have quite a few. Fiorentina have quite a few as well. Inter have a lot. Juve, there was a bit of a decline, which
Juve,
was unusual.
Juve don't have many.
Juve and Milan, I think, are the ones, to be honest, without
it's
many. And Como, funnily enough, I think, actually. But anyway, the money teams, the rich teams.
Literally.
Now, the next question. Matt, again, he asks, assuming Inter drop out of top four this year, who are the dark horses to make UCL?
Are Milan considered dark horses, considering they finished eighth?
I wouldn't call them dark horses, no.
I think Roma, man. I think Roma are due a top four. And I think if it goes well for Gasperini, I think they can do it. And To be honest, I think they will. I think Roma can get top four. I'll put them as my dark horses.
Nice.
And I hope it happens for them.
It's still, of course, very early because we haven't seen any action in the transfer market and all that. But I'm going to go Bologna because I liked what they did in their first season under Italiano. And I think that there might be a repeat over there. And maybe now that they've got their hands on the trophy that they wanted so dearly, they can focus on that fourth spot.
Yeah.
Now, yes. Frank asks a very fun question. What is your best Atalanta 11 from the Gasperini era?
Can I go first?
Sure, bro. What formation did you go for? I went 3-4-3.
I went 3-5-2.
All right.
I should have probably gone 3-4-3. Well, to be fair, these guys can play in both. Those. Okay. In goal, Carnesecchi.
Mm-hmm.
Back three of Romero, Jim City, Palomino. Wing backs, Zappacosta and Gosens, for very different reasons. The midfield, bro. Papu, Derone, and Cope Miners. And in attack, we've got Lookman and Ilicic.
Nice. Okay. Sick. Mine's a bit different.
Okay.
I've got very nice team, by the way. I love the Palomino shout. Glad you get it. Karnesecki in goal as well. Don't think they've had a keeper better than him. I mean, the other one is...
No.
Gollini,
no,
literally. What's his name was decent? Sportiello when
Sportiello
he was there.
Sportiello was okay. Uh-huh.
I put Romero, Jim City and Mancini because imagine facing that.
Aha, but Mancini didn't really... I mean, at Atalanta...
He was still a dog, huh?
Uh-huh.
It was between Mancini and Caldara for me because Caldara scored 9 goals in a season for
them.
Oh
my God, yes. Who I left out, bro. I'm changing Zappacosta to Conti.
To Conti, yes. Conti had a phenomenal season for them.
I'm changing Zappacosta to Conti.
Okay. I put Hatteberg, Coop Miners, Ederson and Gosens in the middle.
Hatteberg, Coop Miners, Ederson, Gosens.
Yes, and then as my three, I have Papu, Muriel, Ilicic. Ooh. I love Luis Muriel, man. Luis Muriel for me is phenomenal. It was very difficult leaving out Duvan Zapata. And to be honest, hindsight, I'm going to remove Ederson and put Malinovsky, man.
Malinovsky was fire.
He was good, he was man. He was so much fun. Like, you give him a second, he'll shoot, like, with his left.
Uh-huh.
I don't have Lookman.
Because he scored the hat-trick in a Europa League final to win them their only European silverware.
I don't have Lookman because he doesn't fit, man, quite frankly. I love Papu, I love Ilicic, I love what they're all about. And Luis Muriel up front for me is just... he's such a fun player. Yeah, yes, I mean, Lookman, of course, is
no,
the
but
best
you know what,
of the
bro,
lot. But
I used my brain. Mm. Muriel's on my bench.
Oh,
he's gonna come on and score too.
Nice. Exactly. You have the last 15 minutes. Exactly. I had him that year on fantasy football, bro. Every time I'd be like, "Oh my god, he's not gonna play." Then he'll come on and score every single week.
This is Frank. Thank you so fucking much. And this is why we ask you to ask us questions, man. This is the kind of shit we want.
Yes. David Vavra. I don't know why I just exposed his last name.
This is the one you didn't manage to share with me.
Yes, I, to be honest, I missed it because at first I didn't understand and then I looked into it. Could you do an all-defensive 11 of Serie A? And I'll go with last season. Okay, so I went for the most defensive team I could think of, I guess.
I'm trying to do it on the fly, man.
Okay, shall I read out mine and we edit mine together? Yes. So I have Vanya on goal. Uh-huh. I see you went for the same thing. most saves. It was between him and Zvilar, right? Uh-huh. Zvilar most clean sheets. Uh-huh. Vanya most saves. I went for most saves. Di Lorenzo, Bremer, Rahmani, Pavlovic. Fuck it. Pavlovic left back. Don't give a shit.
Pavlovic has to be there. Yes. Did you say Di Lorenzo?
Di Lorenzo, huh?
He went forward a bit and got a few assists.
He does, but he is one of the more conservative right backs in the top teams, I think.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
It was between him and Kalulu, to be honest. Mm. I was thinking Kalulu as well.
I'm thinking of the last man. Like, I'm going to go Ranieri, Jim City, Pavlovic.
Ooh, that's nice, actually, Ranieri there as well. Yeah. Friendrup, Lobotka, Çalhanoğlu. Is that good?
Friendrup, Lobotka, Çalhanoğlu.
Like, they're definitely good tacklers and interceptors, but they're not the most physically able, but they will press you and you will have a nightmare against these three.
I'm not against that. There aren't many ball winners in Serie A, Jesus, when you think of it.
Eh.
Lobotka, Çalhanoğlu, Frendrup. Frendrup I like.
Frendrup
Lobotka
is a tackler.
Well, Lobotka, there's nothing attacking about him. Çalhanoğlu, just because he's on the edge of the area, I wouldn't put Çalhanoğlu. I would put, I don't know, man, who I'd put. We'll get back to it. Move to attack.
Now here, I just went for the guys who press the most, right, in attack. So I went for Fadera, who has the most tackles for a striker last season, or an attacking player rather, not a striker. Morata up front. This is the mention of him again. And Pulisic.
I think you can have Lukaku there as well.
You can have Lukaku there. Lukaku. You can, absolutely. Put him on the front post.
Literally.
Yeah,
literally.
Play the ball up to him, just hold play.
Locatelli in midfield.
Locatelli isn't bad either, it's true. But I think I'd rather, in some, Locatelli's a hard tackler as well. And well,
Paredes, maybe.
That's actually a good shot.
Isn't a bad one. Paredes. He's an animal. Yeah. Paredes.
Dave would love to hear yours, to be honest.
What?
Dave, I'm talking to Dave. Who asked the question.
Dave would like to hear mine. And I just gave it. I'm trying my hardest. On the fly. Or whatever. Dave would love to hear yours.
Yes. I think it's time, bro.
You think?
I think it's time. Wisdom with the Wank.
A segment that we've left out recently. Uh-huh. But it's because... It's not because we don't appreciate the Wank.
Uh-huh.
It's because... Sometimes our mind escapes us and we only think of how we need this for the show, this for the show, and we don't think of the biggest luxury we have on this show, which is wisdom with the Wank.
Yes, now the Wank has just been relegated to Serie G. He got a stern telling off in that game as well, apparently, according to one of our patrons. I think it was Matthias. But this is the don't stop him, of course, from sharing wisdom with us on his Instagram story as he grabbed his phone, he took a selfie in bed. And he wrote...
He looks tired.
He wrote, sometimes the most productive action is to relax. And that is extremely profound.
Bro, you want to... Just take a second with me right now. Mm-hmm. This is because we like to implement what the Wank tells us.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take 10 seconds to just breathe a little bit, okay? 3, 2, 1.
And that tension between your eyebrows, there's tension everywhere. Just relax it, let go of it. Feel the tension leaving your body. You can do this with any part of your body.
Bro, inhale the good shit, exhale the bullshit. That's what the Wank is telling us right now. Look.
He'd love that one.
He inhales the good shit, exhales the bullshit, he'd say. Sometimes the most productive thing you can do is rest. Fellas, ladies that, you know, are fitness enthusiasts, do long distance running, go to the gym and whatever. That thing that when you're doing nothing and you say, fuck me, I need to get to the gym, I need to be doing something productive. Make sure you're living in the moment and you're taking time out to sit with yourself, to relax the body, relax the mind. It's good to watch some TV sometimes. It's good to kick your feet up and have a doing nothing night. Gentlemen, it's good to start a career mode. It's good to play Ultimate Team with your friends. It's healthy for the mind. It's healthy for the soul. And rest is the most important thing for your body. Try do a 5K after you're not well rested. It's a disaster. So thank you to the Wank for that.
Yes, as the Italians say, il dolce far niente, no? The sweet of doing nothing is what it translates to. The beauty of doing nothing. I personally struggle with this.
Yes. I'm
sharing a little bit. Yes.
Crippling ADHD.
Like every podcast host ever. Yes, I feel guilt when I do nothing. You know, I need to be productive. I need to work. I need to earn. I need to create. Yes, it's so. Yes, I'll be applying some of the Wank's wisdom to my daily life. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
We hope all of you are having wisdomous Wanks.
Yes.
As well. Thank you for tuning into another episode. I believe that's us.
That's us.
So thank you, everyone, for listening to us blab on for the past hour and 40 minutes. We love you all so much. Of course, we're going to be back next week. And of course, we'll have a little something prepared that we won't tell you about right now.
Yes. Thank you very much. Have the...
wisdomest Wank.
The wisdomest Wank or the wankiest wisdom, whatever.
Ciao, ciao.
Bye.
If you like Serie A or have ever liked it in the past, it's a good opportunity for you to listen once a week and you'll get filled in.
In the football weekend, that's like the main dish. But then a few days later, you drop your episode and that's like the dessert. and the dessert is just perfect.
It's good, the cake.
It makes it feel like we're all sitting in a room together, just BSing with each other.
The atmosphere is fantastic.
I promise nobody will ask you to send boob pics.
Sometimes may be good, sometimes may be shit.
I love how you go into so much detail and show so much passion towards each and every team. Literally, no team is left undiscussed.
When I listen to you, it's like I'm talking to you in a pub. It's like I'm chatting to a friend and you're chatting to me.